welcome to the Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soups. Time to get fired up. Make sure you listen to the Raptor Show and subscribe wherever you find podcasts. Rate, review the program. I'm your host, William Liu, and continue to be joined by co-host Blake Murphy. We got two special guests for you today. We got Mark Stein joining us about 10 minutes or so. Mark, if it's not too early for you, you got to wake up, buddy. All right, we got to call you. And then after we take our break, we're going to bring in a Canadian player, Scarborough's very own, Leonard Miller, who is a rookie with the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Raptors do play the Timberwolves tonight, and we will check in with how the Canadian forward is doing. But in the meantime, Raptors played once again last night. They extended their losing streak to 14. They lost to the Lakers last night. Blake Murphy, you and I are both in attendance for this one. I know you had the riveting Jays game on in the second screen.
I mean, what an ending to that game to come home to, though. Like, walk in the door right as they take it.
What did the Jays do again last night? I'm so locked in on the Raps, I can't focus.
Davis Schneider hit a ninth. So they were getting shut out for a second game in a row. They got no hit. They got no hit one day. So they were like 17 and two thirds innings without scoring a run in this series. And then Davis Schneider hit a 2-run home run to win them the game.
Oh.
Yeah,
it all worked out.
It was one of those games where like the entire game played out like Mo G's minutes last night.
Oh,
where like just God. So much stuff was happening, good and bad.
Yeah,
it was really entertaining. It
sure.
was just like it felt like a this is the fifth game of the season. It felt like we're still in spring training.
Well, I mean, you know, what are they now? 3-2.
Yeah,
3-2. That's
3-3.
3-3. Okay, that's pretty good. You know, for the Raptors, I guess let's start with the positives, because there were positives last night. RJ and Emmanuel quickly returned to the lineup. Both of them instantly just, like, as soon as the game started, it was like, oh my God, these guys are playing competent basketball, and they're allowing other people to not have to overextend and look worse. And they stepped in right away. They were both really good. Maybe they tailed off to a certain degree, like they weren't as effective in the second half, but quickly finishes with 20 points. RJ finishes with 28 points. Blake Murphy, what did you see from both of those guys?
Yeah, I thought RJ was tremendous, first of all. Not only very, very nice to see both of those guys back, especially after, you know, what they'd shared about their situations over the last couple of days and how difficult a time this has been, how much the team's been there for them. And in both of their cases, you know, RJ with his brother, IQ with his uncle, basketball is a big part of those relationships. Mm-hmm. So, you know, nice, very, very nice to see those guys back from that perspective. Quickly looked all right, looked maybe a little shakier just in terms of like timing and decisiveness and stuff like that. RJ looked like he has not missed a game or a practice. Like, yeah. RJ was by far the best player on the floor for the Raptors. You see right away how much they've missed not only his ability to like on the second side of the floor, like attack against the just like, the actions don't die out if there's not an advantage created in the first action in a set. Mm-hmm. You know, RJ being able to keep those alive, you swing it the other way, he can get something done. But also just that level of, you know, pushing and toughness and physicality in transition where the Lakers, at least early on, the Lakers had to be back on their heels a little bit. Mm-hmm. And the Raptors did a good job of forcing turnovers early too. The Lakers came out pretty, pretty sloppy. But RJ's a big piece of that, right? Like, he was a big piece of that for the Knicks bench units when he would come out and then come back in. And he's been a huge part of the Raptors keeping the transition game going when he's been available for them. So you immediately saw that injected back in. The first half of the first quarter was the most fun I've had watching this team in weeks, like before those guys went on the shelf, I think. So, what did you see? Obviously, the energy was way better, but things just kind of things make a lot more sense when you get your two best ball handlers back.
No, I think it put Kelly in a situation where it's like Kelly had to create so much for the team. And yeah, it did lead to things like, okay, you know, 11 assists, that's really rare. And I think, you know, I do feel for the arena crew sometimes because they got to come up with propaganda stats. And I've been there. You and I have both been there on this show. But one of the stats that they put on the Jumbotron yesterday at the game was like, you know, only three centers or three players above 6'10". Have averaged like more than 8 assists. It's very obscure stat over the last 3 games. And it was like, it was Jokic, obviously, Sabonis, obviously, and then Kelly. And I was like, come on, like, what are we doing here? But it's like, that was a reflection of how much the Raptors needed him to sort of create. You put RJ and quickly back into this group, and all of a sudden, like, Kelly looks a lot more comfortable, looks a lot more like, you know, it's a balance between his finishing plays, he's using his craft to score, he's also distributing spacing. But ultimately, he looked more comfortable. I thought Bruce Brown did a better job yesterday of sort of just staying in his role, although he did cut off multiple cutters.
Yeah, but some of that's maybe like familiarity stuff.
Sure.
Especially when he's with more of the bench guys. But yeah, there is a pattern there of cutting into space that is being used at the moment. But that's a team level thing. Yeah,
and it's like I think for RJ in particular, I just you know we've seen a lot of RJ obviously with the Raptors now. We've seen him for a long time here in Canada. But when you see him leave the lineup and then come back in, you're just like remarking the fact that this guy can go to the paint whenever he wants. There's such a skill in that. Like there was stretches of the game where he would come in and he would have not just the skill to do it, the tenacity to do it, but the energy to go to the paint and like 5-6 possessions in a row and either get himself free throws or get himself layups or, you know, get other guys involved off of cuts. You know, kickouts, pick and pop threes. Like, obviously RJ had a really good game overall anyway, 28 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, mm-hmm. no turnovers. But it's the fact that he could actually touch the paint because, like, the rest of the lineup can't do it.
No, he did that in only 26 minutes, by the way. They were playing on a minutes cap. Him and Quickly played 26 and 27 respectively. But, yeah, it's like over the last couple weeks, the next best player on the team at getting 2 feet in the paint has probably been Javon Freeman-Liberty, who, you know, is now back in a much more reasonable – you know, reserve guard role. But, and I'm not saying that to like pump his tires. I like Javon.
Yeah, of course.
But like, yeah, the guy you just called up from the G League shouldn't be your best bet to get into the teeth of a defense. Like mm-hmm. they've desperately, and I know Quickly isn't necessarily a get deep in the paint guy. He's more of a create the space around the elbows for himself guy. But like, yeah, it's nice to have two guys back who can pressure a defense and put, you know, actually after the first couple minutes, make Anthony Davis try.
Yeah, there was.
He was not super eager to do that the first couple minutes.
Look, the Raptors are never beating the Lakers. We said that yesterday as well in our 1 minute Raptors coverage on the Raptors show. But we also, it was just hilarious to see the very first play of the game. They throw a lob to AD and he was like completely uncovered and dunked it. I'm like, is this how the whole night's going to be? And absolutely the answer was yes. The Lakers obviously did turn it like on in the third quarter. LeBron started getting and one, stuff like that. But it was, again, just RJ and Emmanuel really lifted the level of play. I mean, the fact that, like, the Raptors didn't have to call the first timeout being down, like, 11-2 after 2 minutes like they've done.
Yeah, or like the Lakers did in Brooklyn the other night where they were up 17-0.
Oh, God.
That's, that could have been your fate. So I thought it was good. I thought the Raptors played them, well, man. And they, like, fought back and hung around and stuff. And I know it wasn't close by the end, but they have LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And I thought D'Lo had a really nice game last night.
I mean, he was blowing kisses to the crowd. What was all that about?
I mean, he's a Toronto guy.
He's a Toronto guy?
Yeah, he, like, off-season, spends chunks of his off-season
really?
Here. So, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, D'Lo has connections here.
Right, he does have connections here. Shout out to Oakville, apparently.
I don't know. He's probably got fans there or whatever, or he's just, like, having a good time. Like, the crowd was...
He was hitting, like, heat checks and stuff. Yeah. I was like, what can we even do? Like, there's no defense for the Raptors, period.
And, like, the crowd kind of was a pro-Lakers crowd last night, so he's probably just, like, having some fun with that element as well. LeBron, like, was sure to, like, shout out the Toronto crowds and how good they've been over the years and how...
It was a LeBron crowd. It wasn't a Toronto crowd.
Yeah.
Because, again, for people who weren't there for this, and I know to a large degree, like, this is what happens when the Lakers play elsewhere. This is what happens when LeBron comes to your town.
Happened
like,
in Brooklyn.
LeBron is, like, bigger than most NBA franchises, honestly, at this point, right? But, yeah, it was, like, at least 50-50 to, I would even say, two-thirds Laker fans. There was a lot of Laker fans in that crowd. And it was, like, absurdly loud whenever LeBron scored.
Yeah, I think LeBron...
Oh, man, what happened, man?
The LeBron ovation, not even for the intro, just when he ran on the court pregame.
Yes,
and usually people aren't in their seats yet, and it was an early start last night. It was probably the largest ovation that we've heard, at least since Pascal's return.
Yeah, honestly, it's I don't know. I mean, I guess it's LeBron, it's the Lakers, and the Raptors are what they are right now. But, man, I've been going to Raptors games a lot in the last decade or so. Like, it just hasn't been that way. Like, we've had lots of stars come to town. Steph, Kobe.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Like, do people yell for Tim Duncan?
People golf clap for Tim Duncan. Just a light little polite thank you. No, and like... Like, I don't know. I remember a game at, like, the height of Steve Nash's. Like he came back around Christmas time.
Steve was the
and, like,
closest.
He led a fourth quarter comeback for the Suns against the Raptors, stole the game. He had been given, like, Canadian Athlete of the Year or whatever before the game. And the crowd was, like, pro-Steve Nash kind of for that. But that was, like, the home, the, like a homecoming thing. So I don't know. It's always a little awkward,
right?
But like literally the second longest losing streak in franchise history. I'm not going to begrudge fans who just wanted to appreciate LeBron and couldn't get too upset that he was like bullying Moji and Jordan Wara.
Yeah, well, LeBron definitely had a lot of players to pick on Thompson's switches. But let's pivot off the subject. Let's bring in Mark Stein of the Stein Line. Mark, first off, good morning to you. I don't know if anyone else has said good morning to you just yet. I appreciate you waking up early to join us on the show once again.
Early, man. This is early for me.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you
and, know. And to compound my stress, really the big worry over here at the Stein household is the Buffalo Bills just traded Stephon Diggs.
Yeah.
My son is the number one Bills fan on the planet and has a huge AP government test. And the big concern here is, did he see this Diggs news before he walked into the test?
Wow.
And not only the news, but like they picked up a second and sent out some like lower round draft compensation. So it's not even like I get it. Second round picks in the NFL are very, very valuable. We see stuff like this, but it's not even like he gets a shiny new toy to be excited about. They're just like, yeah, Josh Allen needs fewer weapons.
Mark.
I'm waiting for my son's analysis, but it is going to be a painful sports day.
Yeah, this is the thing that I got to get explained because I'm not an NFL watcher at all. But, I mean, again, Toronto is, like, obviously very close to Buffalo, and a lot of Torontonians are fans of the Bills. It's like, I don't get it in the NFL. Like, you see, like, name brand, like, huge stars get traded, and it's like, yeah, it's worth it for a second-round pick. And I'm like, what? I guess part of the NBA is just nothing like that.
Yeah, you know? And like, part of it is, like, the NFL CBA is even more complicated than the NBA's in terms of, like, dead money and creating cap space through trades and stuff like that. So that's a component of it. There's also like big personalities that you know, I'd imagine there's something to that with that. Stephon Diggs has been like a very well-liked guy, but like this isn't the first time he would have rubbed up against a front office or a coaching staff or something like that, if that's the underlying factor here. So, I don't know.
Playoff team and you just trade him for a pick?
Yeah, I don't know. But like, this is the NFL. And I don't know the CBA nearly as well.
I'm with Will Lou as well. I don't know the ins and outs as well. But this whole Bills offseason has just been sending out big name guys to make, because of the NFL salary cap, it just gets too expensive to keep a good team. When you talk about comparing the two sports, I think in the NBA, it would be very interesting if we had contract restructuring. And if stars could take less to create more cap space, if that would even happen. But everything else is really hard for an NBA brain to try to make sense of.
Yes. Right. So I'm seeing the people break down the contracts now. The Bills will also have $31 million of dead cap.
What does that even mean?
Because of the way guarantees get treated and stuff like that. So they're going to also have $31 million of dead cap on top of losing Stephon Diggs for only a second. This is why we probably shouldn't do football analysis on this show.
Is this like the Raptors? Is this
learning
like the Raptors
about the CBA on the fly? But
my bad.
Yeah. No, this is like the Raptors like having to cut a check for like $20 million for Spencer Dinwiddie.
Yeah.
Raptors legend, who I saw last night with the Lakers obviously coming to town.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, somebody at MLSC definitely had to like write a check, or like somebody in ownership had to write a check. And they're like, who is this?
Yeah.
Why is it $20 million? But all right, keep going.
Okay, I'm going to pivot us off the Bills stuff. Yeah, that's a tough sports day. Better sports day around the NBA last night, Mark. Joel Embiid returned, and we got Wemby against Jokic, and we got a good Mavs-Warriors game. Mm. What were you locked in on last night? I know this is a rare, like, no-game week for you, but where were you focused in last night? What was standing out to you?
No, it was just great to be home and watch all. I mean, look, the Wemby-Jokic stuff was just, I mean... Jokic threw a touchdown pass that any NFL quarterback wishes they could throw.
Stephon Diggs, come to the Nuggets.
Basically a full field pinpoint inbound pass for a corner three. I don't know if I've ever even seen that happen.
Yeah, it was like right in the shooter pocket too. Jokic inbounding, again, literally the full length of the court into the corner on the opposite side. And it was like right in the pocket, ready to go up for a catch and shoot. It's nuts. Yeah,
I mean, the pass he threw earlier in the season when it was the sideline out of bounds for an alley-oop, I would probably rate that a touch higher just because a sideline a 75-foot sideline out of bounds pass that leads to an alley-oop is even crazier because of the finish. But the pinpoint nature of that pass, and then Wemby, you know, just continues to, I mean, 9 blocks and watch Jokic multiple times. Mavs Warriors was also a really good game. And then it was, I mean, look, seeing Embiid come back, you know, I always say that I'm a world-class Warrior, and I've been worried about Embiid. Is he coming back too soon? Is he just going to hurt himself again? But he looked really, really good last night. And as important as anything, up for the contact.
Yeah, I mean, Embiid last night finished with 24 points in 29 minutes. In rare form already, 12 free throw attempts. And, of course, it's going to be difficult for a smaller team like OKC to handle Embiid's just, you know, size. But, yeah, just the Wemby-Jokic thing, that matchup. I mean, the fact that Wemby, he's already flirted with quadruple doubles already. This is very close to it. Yeah, he had 23 points, surprisingly on 9 of 29 shooting, but whatever. 15 rebounds, 8 assists, and 9 blocks. So he was really just like 2 assists and 1 block away from the first quadruple double since, like, I believe, who was the last one to get one?
David Robinson, maybe?
David Robinson? Okay, yeah, but probably in like at least 20, 30 years. And I think for me, it's just that stretch where, you know, Wemby's really going back at Jokic, you know, blocking him, then dunking the other way. Then Jokic comes back the other way, dunks on him. And then afterwards, they're just like smiling and giggling with each other. And I'm just like, I feel like they're two really genius players who obviously understand that they're like uniquely skilled and talented. And they're just having fun and enjoying the fact that they get to compete against each other. Like, I feel like it takes a lot to get these guys who are so good and so brilliant to be engaged on that level, and it was just great to see them like joyous more than anything else. Yeah, Stein, I don't know. I mean, when do you think Wemby's going to get his first quadruple double at this point?
I mean, just that he can even get one. I remember covering many years ago a Sean Bradley triple double with 10 blocks, but to tack the assists onto it is just, that team is so bad. He has so little help. It's skeletal now with no Sohan and no Vassell. And right. It's like, it's April. He should be discouraged because we know how competitive he is. And he's just still bringing it. And I think, you know, we all look forward to the playoffs. I was actually going to ask you guys how you're doing with, you know, the Raptors season so soon to end. But, I mean, we have to come to grips with the fact, you know, Wemby's only got a few games left, and we're not going to see him till the Olympics. Like, you better enjoy these while we have them.
And for us, seeing him in the Olympics is going to be terrifying, not this kind of fun. I really don't have a lot of interest in that. But yeah, I don't know. You're right. It's almost at the finish line here. So kind of in binge mode now of like, get as much of this in as you can. And obviously the playoffs are going to be really great, but yeah, Wemby won't see for a while. The Raptors we haven't seen for a couple weeks anyway, but won't see for a long while after this. It's something. I don't know. The Wemby thing though, Will, to your question.
You guys are melancholy. I was actually looking at it and thinking, you know, you guys know that I'm irrationally locked into the baseball series and what it means and how teams fare. You know, there are 40 baseball series on the schedule this season, and the last one is Toronto at Miami. How did the Raptors, after this season that is ending with just this incredible losing streak, how do they get to sign off with a 2-game trip to Miami? That's a pretty nice reward.
Yeah, it's not even 1-2-3 Cancun. It's 1-2-3 Miami. Yeah. I think we should do locker room cleanouts because the Raptors obviously aren't going to, go to the NBA playoffs or anything like that. But they're already in Miami. Like, they should just do the Zooms with the reporters and then just, like, skip the trip back home to Toronto.
You guys should
lobby
to do the show in Miami. Like,
we should, honestly. We should. That should be a just reward for covering the Raptors to this extent for 82 games this season. But, the Raptors are one of these other teams around the – and you pointed this out in your newsletter, but a lot of teams at the bottom of the standings are really, really bottoming out. You know, and I know the Raptors, it's the circumstances that happened, but they also pivoted intentionally towards this sort of, like, rebuild that we've kind of been seeing coming for the last 2 years now. And they did it, and then they got a bunch of injuries, and then the situation is just what it is. Like, they don't have enough of anything, really, to compete right now. But they're not alone. Like, even though this draft is not very good by all the, you know, draft experts, which I don't think any of the three of us here are, a lot of teams are really pivoting and jockeying for that bottom
position. They've lost 14 in a row and gained like a game and a half in the reverse standings.
Exactly. Exactly. So, Stein, I don't know. I mean, is there like a big secret in this draft that we don't know about, or is it just front offices are like...
No. Okay. There is no big... I mean, I know that much. I am certainly not a draft expert, but there are no secrets in the NBA draft. I mean,
okay.
You know, the level of scouting that happens now. So, but, you know, when you talk about bad basketball, and I just wrote a piece about this, you know, at the midpoint of the season, we had four teams that were losing by minus an average of minus 10 points per game,
right.
10 plus points. There's never been more than one in any season, and halfway through, we had four. Mm-hmm. And that's normalized now a little bit, and Charlotte is the only team. We just got the news today that Steve Clifford is stepping down at season's end, and I'm sure it's just been absolutely exasperating for a guy who loves defense and cares as much about defense as Steve Clifford to coach this Hornets team that has been shorthanded all year. LaMelo Ball has missed a ton of time and they can't guard anybody. So at least it's normalized. So we're no longer looking at a historically bad season for the teams at the bottom. And then in the end, you know, obviously Detroit had the 28 game losing streak. I mean, San Antonio was terrible early, but in the end, all these teams comfortably dodge the 9-73 infamy that nobody wants. There are some bad teams at the bottom, but not as dreadful as it looked like it was gonna be.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's led to a lot of rosters having like 30 players show up on their team. Like the Raptors, they just signed another player now in a 10-day to get supplies. Malik Williams, thank you. And when he takes the court, whether it's tonight or whatever during this 10-day, that will mark 30 players who have worn a Raptors uniform at some point in a game this season. And they're like one of three or four teams that have already done that, which is kind of wild. Like,
can you name all 30?
I actually can name all 30. We've actually done this quiz on the show before.
The sneaky one is there's a 31st who got a 10-day and didn't play in Justice Winslow.
Right.
That's how you trip someone up.
Yeah, or Christian Coloco, who was on the roster to start the season, but obviously was medically unfit to play, so he didn't get into a game. So there's actually low-key 32.
Yeah. And then Spencer Dinwiddie, if you want to count him.
That's what I love, though.
Yeah, this is one, though, that, like, if we do this next year, there's no way. Like, remember the year that they lost so many guys to COVID and stuff like that, and, like, Daniel Oturu and Tremont Waters were emergency call. Like, Nick Stauskas was on the team for a minute. Like, we wouldn't be able to name every player that played for the team that year, I don't think. By next year, we will forget some of the 32.
I will never forget Kyra Lewis and his 2 minutes.
Ron Harper Jr.
Yeah. Marquise Noel with a minute.
Marquise, I'd remember.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Well, the Bo Jackson of the Raptors show, Blake Murphy, has an easy column. Will the Blue Jays use as many players this season as the Raptors?
Oh, no.
Yeah. I mean, when you have 26-man rosters, you'll probably get there. But, yeah, it'll be something. If they don't do it until, like, June, it'll be fascinating.
That will be interesting. All right, the other game that you tapped into, Mavs Warriors, I feel like, especially for this from a Canadian angle, but Wiggins, weirdly enough, does a really good job on Luka. And we've seen them match up in the playoffs as well. That was the year that the Warriors got past the Mavs, I believe in the conference finals, if I remember correctly. In any case, I always thought like, okay, Wiggins actually doing a good job here. And of course, he's had an up and down season. I mean, mostly down, let's be honest. But, you know, ultimately the Warriors win. They've won five straight now. Weirdly enough, on the West in the play-in, it's the exact opposite at the bottom of the standings. Everybody just keeps winning, like the Lakers keep winning. So the Warriors just keep, you know, pace in this case. But yeah, what were your takeaways from watching that one as well, Mavs Warriors?
Well, you could make the case that Wiggins guards Luka as well as anybody in the league.
Yeah.
He was sensational, obviously, in that conference finals and was very good again last night. But, yeah, I mean, look, as bad as things looked for the Warriors last week when the enormity of the battle they faced just to get in the play-in, just to secure the 10th seed in this crazy West, we saw how hard that hit Stephen Curry on the floor right after Draymond Green gets ejected in Orlando.
Right.
But they haven't lost since. They won the game before that, and they've won five in a row now. And it's amazing how quickly things change. Houston is suddenly looking at a three-game deficit with only seven games left. So, I mean, it's hard to see the Warriors not holding on to that lead and at least getting the play-in. And again, the basketball nerd in me, my main concern at the bottom of the West standings is I want to see Houston finish 42-40 just so we will be able to say that we had 19 teams with winning records for the first time in NBA history. I don't know exactly what that means. I haven't figured out the ultimate bigger picture significance of it, but we've never had more than 18 teams with winning records, and if Houston can scratch out four more wins, they'll make it 19. But Golden State's going to get that. Look, that play-in, the Mavericks have escaped the play-in zone with their incredible play. That was the first loss last night for their new starting five in 12 games. And at the end of a tough trip, the Mavs were still right there, even though their bench got totally overrun by the Golden State subs. But look, it's we talk about it probably every time we get together. The West is absolutely unforgiving, and you've got all these little races within the West, the top three, who's going to end up 4 and 5, who's going to get 6, how the play-in teams are going to shake out, and that play-in round is going to be insane. So who's in it right now? Sacramento, Phoenix, Lakers, Warriors. Like, two of those teams are not making the playoffs. So it's Phoenix, the Suns, the Lakers, and the Warriors, all-star laden, and the Kings, who were the third seed in the West last season. So it is brutal.
It is brutal. I feel like Adam Silver should just make a one-time exception and allow the West play-in teams to play the East play-in teams because Chicago's already locked in a play-in spot, and they're 36-40. And meanwhile, you know, the Warriors at 41-34 are still fighting for their lives. But, yeah, that's what's going to make it really intriguing. Mark, I appreciate you for joining us once again. I didn't even have time to ask you about that dreadful 0-0 draw between City and Arsenal, man. You know, 8 center backs on the pitch, 4 defensive midfielders, nasty performance. But as a Liverpool fan, I will take those points split between you guys.
Yeah, it was a good day for Liverpool for sure.
Absolutely.
We'll see what happens this afternoon. I've got to sneak my kid home to watch City Villa with me, but also nurse him through this Diggs news. It's gonna be a tense afternoon over here.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, thanks, Mark.
Be good.
All right, we are going to head to a break, but before we go, actually, just want to pass along a note from the station. So if you want to listen to Raptors Minnesota tonight, all right, there's multiple games going on this way. You got to listen to the game on the mainstream on the Sportsnet app and also sportsnet.ca/590. The reaction podcast will be just a podcast only tonight, so you can check that out on the Raptors show feed as always. To listen to Jay's Astro, the season's finale, you can listen to the game as always on the Sportsnet Radio Network or streaming on the alt stream on the Sportsnet app and sportsnet.ca/590. The mainstream will link up at the conclusion of the Raptors game. So, yeah.
How short's the post game going to be tonight? Since you don't have radio obligations, it's just the podcast version.
Yeah, somehow I always end up getting at least like 25 minutes, man. But yeah, we shall see. We shall see.
Yeah.
With the Raptors.
Wolves on the second night of a back-to-back too. No Karl Anthony Towns. I don't know. Maybe it's competitive.
We'll see. If they're competitive through three quarters, it'll be a happy React pod. That's the standard nowadays.
And if not, we'll probably get to see Leonard Miller.
Yeah, which we will take this break. Thank you, Blake. And we'll get to Leonard Miller on the other side of it. But I've been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays, Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, Welcome back to the Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Wim Luke, to be joined by co-host Blake Murphy. Raptors take on the Minnesota Timberwolves tonight. Very, very different context as to when the Raptors played them on the home opener. Raptors actually won that one. It was, honestly, when you look back on this
season. Best win of the season.
Arguably the best win of the season. The fact that the Raptors, who will finish in the 20s in terms of wins, beat a team in the Minnesota Timberwolves, who are going to finish in the 50s in wins. Obviously, it's been a great year for the Timberwolves. But, yeah, Raptors play them second half of a back-to-back. Second half of a back-to-back for the Timberwolves as well. But, yeah, let's talk about this game. Time now for Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance. Blake, I could not believe how large this line was, man.
Yeah, Raptors are 15.5-point underdogs, over-under set at 216. Not entirely surprising they're that big of an underdog. It's the second night of a back-to-back. You know, we anticipate Gary Trent Jr. will be back in after resting last night.
Gary Trent will not miss a chance to play in his home of Minneapolis.
Yeah. Quickly and RJ were under minutes restrictions last night. Whether that bleeds into tonight's availability or just a minutes restriction, Darko didn't say yesterday, but teams don't release their injury reports this early on a back-to-back. So the Timberwolves side were blind as well, although Karl Anthony Towns is obviously out. The notable thing for me on the Wolves side, in addition to being 52-23, they're 9-4 since Cat went down. So they're hanging in there pretty good. And not only are they the number one defense in basketball, the gap between them and number two right now is the largest it's been between a number one and a number two since 2015-2016, when the Spurs were like by far the best defense. So the gap between the T-Wolves and the next best defense is like the biggest gap we've seen in almost a decade here. Mm-hmm. The other note here is since Cat went down, Naz Reid has been incredible. 18.5 points, 6.6 rebounds, 2.5 assists, a block, 1.3 steals, shooting 47% overall, 41% on three.
I mean, yeah, I looked up Naz Reid just in case he was a free agent in the next 2 years, and I'm like,
that's the window on that one.
A lot of money. Yeah, it's a real bargain. They got him essentially on the same deal that Kelly's on right now. And I thought the Kelly deal is fair. I think the Naz deal is just an absolute bargain. But yeah, I mean, look, the Raptors really struggle with teams with size. Minnesota is, even without Karl Anthony Towns, has way more size than Toronto. Obviously, if we, you know, RJ and quickly, if they're able to play, Gary, they're able to play, it does raise the level for the Raptors substantially. But I still think fundamentally, like, who's going to guard Anthony Edwards? Like, who's our perimeter defender on Anthony Edwards tonight? Like, yesterday it was a lot of LeBron on, or Bruce Brown on LeBron.
Yeah. It's probably that again. It would have been Ochai, but I don't anticipate he's available.
Of course. He was back with the team, and he's been moving around. I mean, he's okay. There doesn't seem to be any major injury with Ochai, despite how scary it looked when he did fall in that game. Man, honestly, it was one of the worst moments of the season was when Ochai went up for that alley-oop, fell, got clipped in the Knicks game last week. And even from the 600s, you could hear him, like, yelling in anguish. And I thought it was going to be really, really bad. Thankfully, he's okay, and he's around the team and stuff like that. But yeah, I do doubt that even a week is enough to recover from something like that, even if it's just straight-up soreness. But, yeah, it's hard to sort of, like, anticipate a close game with the Raptors these days. There's something where we were talking to Darko pregame, and one of the questions I had for Darko was just, like, Darko, a lot of these games are blowouts. What can you assess in a blowout from the team? And I think Darko gave a frank answer. He was just like, look, you know, it's still about playing the right way. You know, we still have individual assignments we give to players. There's lots of things to assess, which I do believe, and I do think that that's true. But also at the same time, like, so many things, the games are uncompetitive, like last night. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, I guess you could assess something. But quite frankly, like, it is not as important in the bigger scheme. So I kind of anticipate this game being similar to last one, where once Minnesota realizes there's no rim protection at all down there, they're going to go ahead and, you know, take this game with a sizable advantage.
Rudy Gobert is going to be allowed to take field goal attempts, and they're actually going to run offense for him.
If I see Rudy Gobert take one post up against the Raptors, that's going to be even more disrespectful than when LeBron spun the ball on Serge, man. I don't want to see that. But in any case, yeah, I wouldn't just go against the Raptors these days. But anyway, that's Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance. Yeah, what do you make of Minnesota? Because I know coming into the year, we were still a little bit distressful of sort of like what they were, and that's fair. Like, I don't think they covered themselves in glory the way they ended last season. You know, McDaniels punching the thing and then breaking his hand and missing a crucial game. And then, you know, the fact that they lost the first playing game to the Lakers. They ultimately made the playoffs anyway. But this year, they've really taken it to another level. And yeah, we'll see it tonight. But Rudy's, you know, been great. Naz Reid has stepped up either in a bench role or as a starter. You think that's the six-man case for Naz Reid, by the way?
Probably. I haven't looked at it that closely. Like, my lean had been for a fairly long time. Norm, I thought, was going to be, you know, kind of the leading candidate there. I have not sat down with my hypothetical award ballots yet. But, I mean, Naz, sure. Like, he's been incredible. Like, the 24 minutes a game, you're putting up 13-5 with contribution, assist, steal, block, defense, good, strong percentages. You lose Karl-Anthony Towns, and the team really doesn't – obviously, he's not Karl-Anthony Towns, but the team doesn't really slow down. You know, if we contextualize the sixth man of the year award similar to how we contextualize MVP, which is like who is most important to their team's success in that role, it would be hard to make a case for anyone other than maybe – yeah, I guess maybe in Boston.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. I mean, Boston does have a lot of
and
picks.
Even then, like, Al Horford's come off the bench for only half of his games.
Right.
So technically right now, Al Horford is one bench game away from being, like, right now he's ineligible for six man.
Man, Al Horford's so old. What are we giving him the six man?
I know.
Year
I'm just saying in terms of, like, and Horford doesn't have the numbers that Naz Reid does. I'm just thinking in terms of, like, guys who have come off the bench and actually impacted, like, their team success and things like that. It's a... I mean, Norm's up there, too, probably.
Norm's up there. Malik Monk, unfortunately, got injured.
Yeah.
Probably will curtail his case to some degree. But
especially because it means that, like, it's coincided with the Kings sliding down the standings a little bit.
Right. Yeah, I mean, look, the Wolves, they're doing really well. I mean, again, like, this team needed to be great on defense. Like, that's why you would trade for Rudy Gobert. And, of course, the year one returns were, like, really shocking. And it was like, okay, this is terrifying. We might have just made a terrible trade. They probably did give up too much anyway when you look back on it now. Like, you know, players of his caliber are not being traded for as much as it ultimately was. But at least in the short term, they're making it work. Do you think this team's going to pay to keep it all together, though?
That is an interesting
especially
one.
With ownership being in flux?
Yeah. So for anyone who doesn't know, this team was expected to be sold to a group headlined by A-Rod and Mark Lohr. Mm-hmm. And they had some financing fall out, and then they got new financing. But at the finish line, the Taylor family, who own the team now, basically said, no, they didn't meet the criteria. It's not for sale anymore. The quotes read like kind of like, seller's remorse, like, hey, the team's really, really good now. Do we want out? But, like, if there's a reason you were looking to sell in the first place, and the Timberwolves are headed for, like, double luxury tax territory as soon as next year with the McDaniels extension kicking in. I don't think I'd be surprised if they're willing to pay at that level to keep everything together. Having said that, like, maybe, like, say they win the championship, you get kind of like an afterglow year, right? Where it's like you're going to be making so much revenue from championship stuff and the playoff run and stuff like that. Maybe you can stomach it. But no, I don't think like the whole core is there long term. I don't know who the odd person out would be. But it's hard to see in a market like that with the ownership group that was just trying to sell being like a deep like Clippers level tax team.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that... The Timberwolves are just so confusing me as a franchise. Like, and the comments from both the prospective owners in this case, and A-Rod and Mark Lohr versus, you know, what's been said by Glenn Taylor, who it feels like they've been trying to get Glenn Taylor out of the paint for a while. Like, wasn't KG supposed to come in and take over?
Yeah,
and then he had a lot of negative comments about him as well. It just doesn't really seem, I mean, this is pretty clear based on their overall franchise record, but it just doesn't seem like a really well-run team at all. But at the same time, it's like they also have one of the best teams in the NBA right now. They also have one of the most exciting young players in Anthony Edwards, who, honestly, I feel like sometimes Edwards gets too ahead of himself and gets up, like, you know, he isn't necessarily as productive as the highlights will suggest. Like, he actually has a lot of wild ups and downs, and he takes a lot of bad shots sometimes. But, like, the overall exuberance of the way he's played, we've talked about on the show before. And then we talked to about the Timberwolves. Yeah, we talked to Hanif. Yeah, that's right. Wow.
Oh, his book came in the mail yesterday, by the way. Read that. There's always this year on Ascension in Basketball.
There you go.
Abdur-Rakib.
I wonder if he wrote about Anthony Edwards. But, like, yeah, I mean, they have such a good situation right now. And I just, like, as a fan of basketball, especially for a team that has suffered for so long, I just hope they don't screw it up with, like, ownership with all this stuff.
Yeah.
I do feel like they probably will trade one of their major players this offseason, though, just to avoid the amount of, like, you know, it's just difficult to pay that bill.
It's
probably going to be cap, man. Let's be honest.
And we haven't seen this yet because this is the first offseason where it's because they decided in the new CBA to roll this out kind of slowly. But there are, in addition to the heavier actual tax penalties, which is money out of ownership's pocket, there are more restrictions in what you are allowed to do to build your roster coming in. So there is absolutely the ownership component of, we don't want to pay that big a tax bill, you know, that cuts into profitability or whatever. And then there's also going to be like the GM level, this handcuffs a lot of how I can continue to build this roster. Like we saw last year, the Nuggets try to get ahead of this, for example, by trading a more valuable future first for 2 seconds now, because they need guys in the pipeline developing who are inexpensive and can contribute around the Jokic timeline. Sure, yeah. Right now for less money, because the Nuggets aren't going to be able to go out and, you know, theirs is probably more tax motivated than roster restriction motivated. But like the Clippers are not going to be able to sign a trade for anyone. They're not going to be able to be players in the buyout market for someone the size, contract the size of Kyle Lowry. Mm-hmm. Next year, you won't even be able to aggregate salaries. So you couldn't even do the James Harden 4-for-1 deal, right? Because you're not allowed to do that with salaries. So these teams also have to consider, like, how do you actually make sure the team is competitive roster building wise? Mm-hmm. It'll seem like a cheap move on the surface.
Yeah.
But there are those components as well. Speaking of Anthony Edwards, by the way, Tim Bontemps dropped his, never mind. We will come back to that later in the week. MVP straw poll. Yeah.
We will come back to the straw poll later on in the week. We do have Leonard Miller joining us, Minnesota Timberwolves forward. Leonard, I appreciate you calling into us, man.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime. How are you?
We're doing well. First off, obviously, you know, the Raptors playing the Timberwolves, playing you guys tonight. Hopefully we get to see you on the court at some point in this game. I know it's probably got to be very cool for you to play against the Raptors. I know, you know, you're from Scarborough. There's also a lot of people watching you from back home. We've also just been sort of keeping track of all the Canadian forwards and all the Canadian players, obviously, because it's a Canadian program as well. And so we've been tracking you, and you know, I think for a lot of people, one of the lasting memories so far that we've seen of you as a pro was on draft night. The hug that you gave Mark Tatum after your name was called. Can I take you back to just, you know, draft night and sort of the emotions that went into that moment from the draft, which was genuinely one of the most moving parts I've ever seen from a draft night?
So reflecting back on draft night, that night was, like, so special for me. To hear my name called and my dreams come true, and me finally being in this position, it was like no other. And when I was called up and I attended the draft that day, and I was present, seeing I walk up there on stage, get my hat, and know where I'm gonna go for my start of my career, it was just a special moment for me, and I was like so happy, and there's a lot of emotion in that. So,
what were the emotions that went into it? Like, you know, because I think a lot of the mock drafts had you going in the 20s. I seen one that even had you up as high as 12. And then the anxiety of having to wait until when it got to 33. Did that play into that moment for you as well in terms of the emotions?
I would say so, to be honest. But you know, whether I went higher, lower, it's all the same thing. Just get in, get my work done. Regardless if I'm, it's just a number, it's just a title to what you are. So you still got to get the work done. You still got to, you know, prove it. I feel like regardless of what number I was, it's still the same Leonard Miller, same Leonard Miller going to go in and work and continue my next journey as a pro.
So what is the part of it like where you get your, like, the Spurs draft you, but you're getting traded to the Timberwolves immediately? Did you know it was the Wolves picking you, and did you get to keep the Spurs hat still?
No, I didn't know. I didn't know any of that. When I walked there on stage and then, it was known that I was to the Spurs, I didn't even know that I didn't actually go to the Spurs. I was at the Timberwolves until, like, later, maybe 10 to 15 minutes, like, after the fact. And I was back there doing, like, media and all that stuff. And then, like, it was just a crazy experience. But nonetheless, like, whether I was with the Spurs or Timberwolves, I mean, now I'm with the Timberwolves, but it's the same thing. They get the same person. So all that changed for me was just where I was going to be. But that was something, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, I saw you at Summer League a couple weeks after the draft, and I thought you were definitely one of the standouts for, you know, your squad and, you know, that Minnesota obviously sent to the summer league. And then it continued over into preseason. You had some strong performances. And then it's got to be a great experience for you. Like, first ever pro game, you come back home to play in Toronto and whatever, the Raptors won that game. But tell me about that feeling of, like, you know, coming home. I don't know if you've been to many NBA games even before that, or if you've been to a lot of Raptor games specifically because you grew up here. What was that feeling like, seeing, you know, your first professional game, and it's in Toronto of all places?
Yeah, so as you said, like, I grew up there. Actually haven't been to many games. I've been to, like, maybe two, I'd say.
Okay.
But I haven't been to any, like, much Raptors game growing up like that, like, a lot, like a handful. Just a couple. And playing there for my first ever game as a pro, it kind of felt like special, and it felt like no way that this is happening. Like, imagine playing the team where you grew up from, like, for your first game. So it was nice to get out there. I seen friends and family, and unfortunately couldn't get the win, but it was just a starting point for us, and we got so much better season one. So,
Did you know, because the Raptors obviously had a high pick in that draft, did you know if there was any interest from the Raptors, or did you and your agent receive, like, some notification that maybe the Raptors are looking at you?
Not too much, but, like,
okay.
Well, throughout the night, it's not like I knew I was going to go. So if I got picked up by the Raptors, that would have been special. It would have been good news. I was just ready for whatever.
Right.
Overall, Leonard, you did G League Ignite last year. You've spent a good chunk of this year in the G League. Your numbers are way up. The comfort level with Iowa seems great. How would you evaluate this first NBA season for you, but really your second go through of the G League?
I evaluate it like it's been like a good experience. Definitely gotten better. Learned a lot, and you know, I already been in a situation. I already played in the G League, so I was familiar with. How to really be successful. I was familiar with the player already, so going in, it wasn't like I was brand new. I was already custom, so it made things easy for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, G League Ignite now has been shuttered, which I don't know. What was your reaction to that when you saw that the G League Ignite program had to, you know, I guess, close down?
I mean, it's an unfortunate thing that's happened for the program, especially like with the program actually helping and maturing and making sure that these young men that go into the program get to where they need to be and have a stature in their life where like, you know, they're turning into like adults and like they're grooming them in a way in which is preparing them for life as well. And Ignite's so beneficial in so many areas, not even just on the basketball court, that many people don't know about. But I mean, to touch on the court play now, you know, you're in that setting already, getting a feel for the game, playing against grown men, and getting that experience. So it's unfortunate that they're ending. And it was such a good program, and I enjoyed it a lot. But to hear that news, it kind of feels good that I was, like, one of the first people to ever do that. You know, there's been 4 years of that, and to know that I was one of the four, it kind of feels good, but it's unfortunate at the same time that's ended.
Yeah, well, I'm happy that it worked out for you, and clearly, obviously, it's produced a lot of NBA players, and you know, and again, it is a difficult time, obviously, for younger people to be going into that league, playing against grown men, getting you a taste of what it's going to look like to play in the pros, and now you're there, and yeah, Leonard, we're just going to continue to track your career. We wish you the best of luck, and yeah, we hope to see you on the court tonight against the Raptors.
Thank you. I appreciate your time, and thanks for having me.
For sure. Leonard Miller.
Yeah. It's been nice to see. I mean, like he said, he's comfortable in the G League again. He's been there before, but it's been pretty cool to see, like, I mean, not that many guys at that level of prospect repeat down there and do a ton of time, and he's just so much better already than he was a year ago. And this is a guy who obviously was a bit raw as a prospect, all the upside in the world.
That's the whole thing with him, right? It was like, you know, he hit this growth spurt. He was a guard. Then he kept coming to those guard skills in a much bigger body. He's like 6'10", 7'2", wingspan. I think, you know, in a previous era of the Raptors, they definitely would have, like, looked at something like this. The only thing, and this is shouts to Lee Van Osman of the Toronto Star, mm-hmm. who's done a great job covering, you know, Leonard's story, but he had, like, a minor back issue that mm-hmm. caused him to slide in the draft. And so Now he's in Minnesota. It's difficult to obviously crack the lineup in Minnesota for a winning team, but that's maybe a separate tonight. Story. But yeah, maybe tonight. Anyway, that does it for us today. I've been your host, Waller. You've been listening to The Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup.